Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, pal. It's Friday, which is always a good start. And the Leafs look great. I don't want to get too excited, but if we play it smart, the third wave might not turn into a fourth wave. So I'm just fingers crossed for smartness. Yeah, things are okay.
Okay, nice. I've been sort of out of it a little bit on the news. Did I hear, are they extending the lockdown or shutdown or what's going on in Toronto?
There's an argument for extending it. I don't know if it's been officially done.
Okay.
I'm just quickly looking at Twitter right now. The most important things that have happened in the last few hours, Matt.
Always on Twitter.
There was a brawl at the Mayweather versus Logan Paul press conference.
Yep.
Something to do with Nazis. And something called Jupiter's Legacy. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is. What was I going to say? Oh, no, it left my head. I just thought of it, Bob. You know what the cushiest job is as a police officer? Apparently, boats are being deployed up here in Lake Muskoka to make sure there's no pleasure crafts going on, that boats aren't being used for anything beyond if you're on an island to go get food and stuff. So there is like boats patrolling the area to make sure everyone's adhering to the stay-at-home rule.
So boat duty, I would think playground duty is pretty cushy.
Playground, the one of the playground one, though, is you could get some angry kids who said, hey, let us be on the slide. What the hell is this? It's like, yeah. get off your cobalt. I mean, it's about the easiest gig I can think of as a police officer than on the Muskoka patrol.
Well, you know, since we're talking about this, we'll get to the Raptors and the Leafs and everything, but I threw out a call for questions.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the trailer. Did you get a chance to see the Quiet Place trailer?
Quiet Place 2? Wait.
Okay, so we'll get to that a little later. But I did throw out a question. So this came in from Steve, who said, trespassing on golf courses to see how many holes you can get in before getting caught, then run like hell. Good idea or great idea?
Great idea. I used to do that as an early teenager at St. George's Golf Course. One time, we actually got chased at night by golf cart security, which when their lights come blazing on you in the middle of the night, it's scary for a moment. And then you think, they're on golf carts. How scary can this really be?
Got me to thinking, Matt. Mm-hmm. What's the most illegal thing you've ever done? You're an abide by the law kind of guy.
Yep.
What's the most illegal? Because technically what this gentleman here, Steve, is suggesting is illegal. What's the most illegal thing you've ever done?
We had a legal satellite for years in university. That was pretty awesome. I've certainly imbibed in alcohol before I was 19 years old. So there was that.
So teenage drinking and stealing cable.
Yeah.
So basically your crime career is the plot for PCU with Jeremy Piven.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to protest.
I'm not going to answer that. No, I'm not going to answer.
Oh, come on.
I can't.
See, the great thing about that answer, Bob, is even if you've done nothing, now you sound so badass because it's this big secret. You can't tell anyone.
My daughter's in the house, and I'm going to wait till at least 14 for some of the stories. I will say this, though. What Steve reminded me of was, did you ever go pool hopping back when it was hot and you were a kid? You'd go into the apartment complexes and go swimming in their pools at midnight?
I never did that. That always looked really you know what? No, I don't remember ever doing it. I feel if I did, I would remember.
Yeah. I got busted by the cops once. Me and my buddy's name is Gene Kelly. So we're both standing there like idiots with our sopping underwear in our hand with the cops' lights in our face. And the guy says to me, what's your name? I said, Bob Mackowitz. And he goes to Gene, what's your name? He goes, Gene Kelly. It's like, okay, guys, into the car.
Yeah,
he was obviously a Q107 listener, so we thought we were both giving him the gears. We just happened to be named after people he had heard of.
That's right. Your dad, big part of Q, one of the biggest parts of Q107, And Gene Kelly, well, that's just Gene Kelly. I wish you had said officer. It's not what you look like.
What?
When you had your wet bathing suit on, they're getting at you for being in a legal pool. Officer, it's not what it looks like.
I remember when the cops came, Matt, and this is totally true. I saw the lights going through the pool, and I thought, if I can just hold my breath long enough, they'll leave. So I tried to do laps underwater. But you know what? They outweighed me.
Oh, that's such a badass action hero move. I feel that's something Tom Cruise would often do, of just like in Minority Report. You just got to stay underwater as long as possible.
You know what I needed is I needed one of those hollow reeds that I could just like put up like a snorkel.
Got full MacGyver.
I got a couple of Leafs questions here that can get us into a Leafs conversation. Can you hang on a second? Opal, quiet.
Yeah, that'll do it. That'll
Dad's,
do it.
Dad's doing a pod. Quiet.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Let's start the timer.
Okay,
now.
Dad. I won't bark again because you said, there it is. Yeah.
So in the hierarchy of things, I've been left to watch the dog. Sandra's on a call. Charlotte's about to start school again, so I can see everyone's running out to make sure the pod's okay.
Yeah. I had a dog chase me yesterday while jogging.
Oh, really? Tell the story, and then I'll get to the Leaf stuff.
Yeah. It was hilarious. Just in some of the trails up here, and there was a woman with her little white dog, and it just starts following me, yapping, and I'm laughing at it the whole time. But it goes on for about 30, 40 seconds. And my honest thought was, should I turn around? Because if this dog keeps following me, what if the dog loses its owner and the owner's freaking out and I'm doing my best to tell them it's cool. This is all fine. This is actually hilarious. So I had that. And then I passed by one of the quick one, a like 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl with a German Shepherd that must have outweighed her by 50 pounds. And she's doing her best to hold on to it as I'm jogging by. That one was a little different.
That one's very different. You know, it's a cute story in your case because the dog was small.
Yeah.
If you get the dog, I'm going to say to 35, 40 pounds, 40 pounds.
Yeah.
40 pounds and up, it's no longer a cute story. I got chased by a dog.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
But under 40 pounds, you go, you know what? I got chased by a dog.
You know what? One is like a psychological thriller, and the other is a rom-com that involves Jennifer Aniston.
Aaron Schmeling writes, what wine typifies the Leaf season?
It's a wine that has been aged correctly. It is, you know, it's some like big, bold wine that when you open it too young, it just doesn't taste right. And that was the Leafs the last couple of years. And now Marner and Matthews are both like Selke-esque type players and everyone's more mature. Like this is a well-aged wine open at the right time.
So what wine would that be? And then I'll get to the praise for your answer.
Okay, well, let's, if you want to go super specific, you know what? It's just, this is a good Bordeaux. This is like a 2005 Left Bank Bordeaux.
I love that answer, and I don't know what it means, but I assume you're correct. And that was a very, very thoughtful answer. Mm-hmm. The idea of it being aged correctly. Why do I feel like you, did you actually hold yourself back from talking about the kind of wood used in the casks?
Well, I was going to say the key with Bordeaux is it's always a blend between Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot, and sometimes you just got to get the blend just right and to really nail the wine, and that's the Leafs.
So I'm going to let the dog bark to see if anybody else will actually come to take a look at what's up with the dog. Or like, how long will the expectation be that I will take care of the dog?
Now, what if you pet it? Like, why is Opal barking? Like, usually dogs bark, they just want attention. Can't you just pick up Opal and like rub the belly?
See, I could, but then if I stop, the barking will increase.
So gotcha.
This is kind of one of those treat him mean, keep him keen kind of things.
Yep. Okay. I gotcha.
All right. Paul Zhang writes in, is Austin already a greater Leaf than Sundin? I'll take this one.
Yeah, go.
No. But that's because of the way the question has been worded. Is he already a greater Leaf? Well, if you look at the duration of Sundin's career, he accomplished a hell of a lot. Made it to the conference finals. He was one of the best players in the league for an extended period of time. His teams had a run of success. Austin is entering the phase where he's about to become greater than Sundin, but he hasn't actually done it yet. I think the correct answer to Paul Zhang's question, if I can rephrase the question, is Austin already a potentially greater Leaf than Sundin? And I think we've seen the answer to that is yes. Like, let's not forget, Sundin, along with Dave Keon, might be the most talented Leaf in history.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a long, you know, it's not like we're talking about, is Austin already greater than, you know, Jean Beliveau? Right? Like, it's just Matt Sundin. He's a Hall of Famer, but, you know, I don't want to denigrate Sundin. I love Sundin, but
yeah.
Austin has shown that he might have a career better than Matt Sundin's, which is a Hall of Fame career, let's not forget.
Absolutely. Well, here's my question to you. Is this season, the 2020-21 season, is this a better single, more dominant single season than any of Matt Sundin's?
I want to interrupt you for a second. So I walk into Charlotte's room where she's on the computer.
Yeah.
And the dog's barking and following me, and she's in bed and she looks at me and raises her fingers with the peace sign like, "Yo, what's up?" Charlotte, Daddy's doing the pod. You notice how Opa was barking for 20 straight minutes?
I tried to stop her.
You tried to stop her. She tried to stop her, Matt, from the bed, giving the peace sign. Daddy's going to close this door. Love you. Bye.
You're real hard ass there, Bob. You're truly the bad cop in this relationship.
You know what? Honestly, like, here's the thing. Sandra was raised in an Italian house.
Yeah.
So the most stringent parenting, I would say, is you can't have a fifth pork chop.
That is a tough punishment because, you know, four pork chops, who can live off just four?
It's funny because when I grew up, right, like my parents, like especially my mom, was really strict. Like we were in bed by 8 o'clock, you know, it was a weird mix of different things because it was a bit of a rock and roll house, but there were definitely like rules and schedules. So like I was shocked to discover that by the time you're Charlotte's age, Sandra was staying up, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning playing cards, drinking wine, hanging out, full-time job.
So European of Sandra.
You know what? She turned out better than I did. So what do I got to say? Okay. So anyway, you were saying something interesting about Matthews there. You were asking, has he had a better season?
Yeah. Has he had a more dominant single season than any of Sundin's? And maybe that's hard to answer because you got to go back and look at it all. But I think that might be the one thing you could say is, did we ever have a year where Sundin was clearly the second best player in the NHL?
I don't think so. And just, you know, because it's a smaller season, we're not going to see how it would play out over the whole thing. But if the projections held, like this is a well into the 60 goals kind of season for, you know, assuming that he would stay healthy and assuming he would stay something reasonably in pace, this is the most exciting season for a Leaf. God, I mean, the power play sucks and he missed time with a sore wrist. What we're seeing now is like, I can't remember any Leaf doing this. Can you?
No, absolutely not.
When I was a kid, Daryl Sittler would go on some pretty hot runs, and Boreas Salming was consistently really great. But I can't remember anyone ever saying nobody's better than Sittler, unless you were a serious Leafs fan, but then you were just deluded.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna go with this. I think to your point, this is at the very least the most exciting season a Leaf has had in my lifetime. And to Paul Zhang's question, I think he will be greater than Sundin by the time he's done. If he stays healthy, he'll have had the greater career.
And one other thing to add, there's one advantage that Matthews has that Matt Sundin never had. Mitch Marner.
Right.
Like, Sundin had some really good players around him. And I think sometimes we forget how good those early 2000s Leafs teams were. But Sundin never had a Mitch Marner on his wing.
Yeah, who knows how good Mitch is going to be? It's a great question. He's third in 5-on-5 scoring this year in the NHL. What he does on the ice is so fun to watch. I can't remember. This is the other thing. The last time I was kind of this sort of intrigued by a player in a Leafs uniform was McGillney. Just to watch a guy who could bring a level of skill and creativity to what he was doing, where you think, I may see something tonight that nobody else in the league can do. And nobody else in the league would think to do. Yeah, it's really, really exciting. I love it. Okay, let's see. Any other questions here? I got a Raptors one that I want to get to in a little bit. But this one from R. Colin Tate. Now, R. Colin Tate sent out a thing about D&D. He was talking about Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And I got a note back to him saying, you and I have talked about playing D&D forever. So he said, do you guys want to join a game? Now, I immediately jumped in and said yes, and you started sending up pictures of wine. So this is from R. Colin Tate. Is Kaz going to play D&D or just take pictures? The party needs to know.
All right. Well, here's the thing, Bob. Do you want to break the news or do you want me to? You have the best of intentions. And if you were in the game, it would be a delight. You're not going to be playing Dungeons and Dragons. You'd love to, but you got enough on your plate as it is. You just love it so much. You immediately say yes, but something tells me you're not going to have your chaotic neutral half orc wizard thing going.
So I'll take that as a no from you with the explanation that you're realistic enough to know you're not really going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll say yes, the same way I always say I'm going to learn to drive or follow the CFL.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a really, really good and probable outcome.
I'm just being outcome. Yeah, I've been realistic. Ed, who's the person? Because I don't have my in
R. Colin Twitter. Tate. I'll read you. I don't know him. Assistant professor of media at TCU. I suppose that's Texas Christian University. Ooh. Go Horned Frogs.
Yeah, Horned Frogs.
Co-author of The Cinema of Steven Soderbergh, Indie Sex, Corporate Lies, and Digital Videotape, De Niro Aficionado, and Canuck Living in DFW. I guess that's Dallas Fort Worth.
There it is.
He sounds like a good guy.
Yeah, he checks a lot of boxes for things that we would like. And listen, I'll go back and forth with 100 fun D&D things on Twitter, but to actually say play a game, that I would have to break out the old books. I'd have to go back and get the advanced player's guide, some monster manuals, DM guide, that kind of stuff. I feel it would take too long. And I just don't think I'd be able to fully commit to it. Because if you want to do it, you want to go full in. You know, it's not just, hey, let's go find Tiamat for shits and giggles.
What Paul Rudd / Judd Apatow movie is it where the wife thinks that Paul Rudd's cheating and they follow him and it turns out he's playing fantasy baseball once a week?
Knocked up.
I thought so. Maybe this will be my version of that, where I do this to stay married.
Yeah.
Like, you have to pick the nerdiest thing you can think of. And maybe the only thing nerdier than fantasy baseball in person would be D&D.
It's close. It's actually a good. Which one is nerdier, fantasy baseball or Dungeons and Dragons? I do like this image now of Sandra Pacheca, coming in, discovering you down in the basement as you're ready to cast cast a spell on the Demogorgon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so briefly, even though you're not going to play, if you were going to play, what's your favorite character type? Can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to say you like magic user.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to say that your preferred alignment is chaotic good.
I always said myself as neutral good.
Really?
Yeah. I think because...
Explain the subtle difference.
I think with neutral good, because it's very easy for me not to take anything personally, where I can be very dispassionate when I need to be. So, but I'm generally a good person, but I take almost nothing personal. So that's why I went neutral.
A lot of rangers were neutral good a lot, because like nature, like the forest, they, like you, Matt, they didn't have a vision of good and evil. That was the human vision, where it was divided up into camps. It was more like one holistic entity where good and evil are kind of just different faces of the same coin. Does that sound right?
Absolutely. With the one exception being with the Rangers, I'm not being in a tent. I'm a magic user. I got a tower. I've got a really kicking wine cellar. Oh, it would be a great time.
I kind of feel like your decision to get into wine, that's what you would have been like if you got into magic. Just a lot of study and sequestering yourself in hotel rooms at various times with gigantic books and then emerging a maester.
That's 100%, absolutely. And they got potions with the smoke coming out of it. And my lips are red because, I'm trying to figure out back.
Can you guess what player I always wanted to be? What character type?
I would feel, part of me would say you'd want to be a cleric, just because if you do have a lot of religion in your background, but the cleric is lame. So in the end, I'm going to go paladin.
Matt, you want to hear something terrifying?
What?
Not only are you right, you're exactly right.
Yeah, I knew it.
I I loved being clerics, but then you couldn't kill anybody and your only weapon was a mace. And when you're 12, yeah. who wants to hit an orc with a mace?
Yeah, yes. No one plays Dungeons and Dragons where it's like, hey, you stand back here and heal us after we're done with our super cool battles.
Exactly. No, I wanted to be right out there with my plus five Holy Avenger.
Oh, yeah.
Best sword in the game. We've done a lot of D&D talk. Let's see. Mandy374 thinks I know nothing about politics. I apologize for the liberals. I think I could be harder on them. Maybe not as hard as Mandy would suggest, but John Doherty, this is an interesting one. It's directed to me, and then you and I can get into this. Did Bob want Pascal's heave to go in or miss? John, here's the thing. Last night was a complicated one for me because it kind of felt like, do you remember the game before the trade deadline when everyone watched because it was going to be Lowry's last game?
Yes.
I felt like last night I kind of owed it to the team to watch because it was going to be the last game of this run. If they lost to Washington, they weren't going to make the playoff game. The idea that this team would come back in some recognizable form, or just it felt like symbolically somehow losing last night and not making the playoffs would officially be the end of the greatest run in Toronto sports in my lifetime. And so I went to flip it on, but before I did, I went to ESPN to see what the score was, and the Raptors were up by 10, and I was mad, and I thought, I can't do this. I can't root for my team to lose, you know?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, John, I wanted it to miss, but I also couldn't bring myself to not follow this game because of the symbolic importance. So I followed it on ESPN Gamecast by myself in a room in the dark.
You know what? That's all you deserve to give to the Raptors. I was excited about that game until I saw they were resting Lowry. And then I'm like, okay, if they don't care, then why should I?
It's like, how do I say this? You know how you said you don't want to join that D&D game because you know you're just not going to finish it?
Yes.
That was Masai Ujiri and team yesterday saying, no, we're not going to play D&D.
Here's the thing. I was excited to watch the game. The show yesterday was all about that game. And then I saw Lowry was out. I'm like, bleep it, I'm out. But like you, Bob, I sort of kept an eye on it. And then as it was close late, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch it. And then I was rooting for them. And I cheered when Van Vliet hit that three. And I wanted that Siakam heave to go in. Because in the moment, I was rooting for the Raptors to win. Because it was another night where the players like, bleep it. You're not going to give us all our weapons? We're still going to try and win.
And the funny thing is, it's not like the playoff odds are going to improve that much for the Raptors between... not the playoff odds, the
draft.
Draft odds. Thank you. It's not like the lottery odds are going to improve all that much because there are some really bad teams. If we're lucky, we'll pick sixth.
Yes.
If we're unlucky, we'll pick seventh.
That is the range.
You know, this is not Buffalo trying to win the lottery because they want Austin instead of Jack Eichel. We're either going to get Moses Moody or Scottie Barnes.
Yeah.
You know, like these are nice players. They're good players, but they're not franchise altering players. I read an article the other day that said if Minnesota does win the draft lottery and they get Cade Cunningham, that with him, Karl Anthony Towns, and Anthony Edwards, they should make the playoffs. And I thought, so three first overall picks, they should make the playoffs. I don't think that bar is too high.
My God. And then look at the Raptors. It's all end of the first, you know, Siakam, OG, Van Vliet, none of them even sniffing as a high pick. By the way, shout out and quick sidebar, but we'll get back to the Raptors that game last night. When Jokic wins the MVP, he's basically going to be the first ever second round pick to win the MVP.
It's amazing. It's a great story if it was happening. Because it's in Denver, it's a better story, but it also means it's less of a story.
Yeah.
If he was a Laker and he was a second overall pick or a second round pick and he was on the verge of winning the MVP, I think we'd be talking about it.
Agreed. And Denver's look great even after Jamal Murray went out. I think that'll kill them come the playoffs. As nice as Michael Porter Jr. is, do they have that second guy to create their own shot when Jokic isn't hitting it? That's the question.
The thing that worries me the most about the West right now was, say what you will about the Lakers, they at least looked like they were going to beat the Clippers. And now I don't know who's going to beat the Clippers. And my absolute worst case scenario for this NBA season or any other is that Kawhi wins in LA. I could vote for Kawhi if he screwed the Clippers over and went somewhere else. I could definitely vote for him then. But the Clippers to me are like, they're now my least favorite franchise in all of sports. And I'm afraid they look really good. And the, you know, when Murray went down and now the Lakers have all kinds of health problems, Davis is out of the game last night for back spasms. I'm not sure in the West who really beats them. And that's got me upset.
If Davis isn't 100%, and now it feels like last year's run was the exception, not the rule, with Anthony Davis and his health. To me, it's very simple. If Anthony Davis and LeBron are 100%, they're getting out of the West. And I feel really good to say that. But if Davis is really banged up, then you can absolutely make a case for the Clippers, who have one of the best records, despite George missing a lot of time, despite Kawhi missing a lot of time. And yeah, the Clippers have a legitimate shot, and I'll be rooting against them unless they're facing the Brooklyn Nets. And then I'll be cheering for them with the passion of a thousand suns.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to cheer for Utah, but I'm not against it. I would like Portland actually to do really well. I don't see that they will, but I think it'd be fun if Norm went on a run, and it's hard not to love Dame Lillard.
Oh yeah. I'll tell you right now, if I'm doing my rankings of guys who I'm rooting for the most to win in the playoffs, Dame Lillard is, he's number one. Like, Damon Lillard would be number one. If you could say, Matt, pick one guy who gets to win a championship, it'd be Lillard, because he said over and over again, I want to win here. I understand the grind. I understand the hard work, but I don't want to leave to go somewhere else. I want to do it here.
Let me see if there are any other questions that have come in. I think that might be it for questions. Yep. Yep. Just more stuff about how I don't know anything about politics.
I can teach you too, Bob. There's a group called the Conservatives. They're more right-wing. Sometimes they're called the Progressive Conservative. Then there's the Liberals. They're the color red. There you go.
You know, I did ask for it. It was stupid of me, but Aaron O'Toole sent out a tweet, and I just responded directly to him, as I do from time to time, just saying, I can't hear anything you say until your party acknowledges climate change is real. And all right. That only went over so-so.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What is the motivation? Because what you did is so wildly common. Everyone does it, or most people do it. I never do. I've always wondered about the motivation, you know, especially when everyone's going after Trump. Like, someone would quote retweet Trump and say, what a pompous asshole, and he doesn't care about lives. And they're not wrong in what they're saying, but it's not going to convince anyone who loves Trump to change their ways. It's not like he's going to read it and go, huh, maybe. Like I always want to know, what is the, is it some sort of emotional satiation when you respond on Twitter?
So here's the thing. For me, I realized that, you know how within Ontario, that Friday press conference with Doug Ford around wave three of COVID went so poorly. Now, I question to what degree it was the people's reaction, to what extent it was the fact that even the cops said they weren't going to do this, that basically humiliated this team into changing their path. But if it's true that politicians are obsessed with polls and public opinion, then you have to send the message. As much as it is a drop in the bucket, all of us drops in the bucket together. I remember Jean Chrétien once said that, if you can put 100,000 people on Parliament Hill, I'll do anything. And I think he was being glib. But the point is simply this. We do live in a democracy. And in the end, like, we're not their employees. Like, they work for us. They're our employees.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they get paid by us to do our work. So if you send the message that you don't like what's happening, they're obliged to change or they get voted out. I used to think that responses on Twitter were a waste of time. And someone pointed out to me that Me Too is not a waste of time. And that started on Twitter. That might be the exception rather than the rule. And there might be a lot of people who virtue signal on Twitter. And there's certainly a lot of that. There might be half-baked or half-informed or researched opinions. And God knows I've made enough of those. But you can't deny the fact that if you can get a million people to do something all together, somebody has to listen. So I guess, and I don't say this to be self-important, and I am a bit of a smartass, and I do enjoy that side of it. But really, I kind of felt like maybe this is all anybody can really do, is say what they think.
The Me Too example is a great one. I guess for me, what it always comes down to is 14% of Canadians are on Twitter. Of those 14%, a smaller percentage actually engage or tweet or do things like that. So I always, I always amaze when companies or politicians get so nervous or bow, or I don't say bow down, but be influenced by Twitter, where it's actually a really tiny percentage of the populace that's on it. So I guess that's why I always wonder about what impact does it have, because it's still only such a small amount of people that are on it. But the Me Too one, that's a good example.
Sorry, Charlotte, come here for a second. I want you to talk to Matt. So my daughter just came up with an amazing way to fundraise. So her and her friends put together a charity.
The class, but
they're raising money to help Syrian refugees.
And now right? gambling, you're winning money.
Talk to Matt and explain to Matt how it is that you're fundraising.
Okay. Basically, I'm just gambling my dad for the money.
What does that mean?
We're playing poker, and he's only won one game. So far, I've gotten $20, and I'm about to get an anime lamp.
I don't know what that last part is, but first off, that is awesome that you're doing this charity. That is so wonderful. I mean, the empathy you got's incredible. And two, is your dad a really bad poker player? Does he have tells?
Yeah.
Well, do you know what tells are?
Out of 20 games, he's won one.
Mm. Yeah, that's not good.
Not at all.
No, and that's weird because your mom is good at gambling.
Yeah.
How about you and Nona?
Oh, I always play with my grandmother. I'm better than her, too.
Oh, are you taking Nona for cash?
Yeah.
Nice. I love it. I love it. We got to get you.
She's walking off. Hang on a second, Matt. The Pachecas are such card players. And Charlotte inherited that. There's this story. This is how competitive her Nona is, okay? They were sitting there playing. They were doing a puzzle together. A puzzle, Matt. A 500-piece puzzle. And Gina's, like, getting the pieces together. And under her breath, she goes, "I beat you, Charlotte."
First off, I'm not shocked about that. When you and Sandra at the cottage, the most miserable time was you guys playing Scrabble. You got so angry at each other.
And like 4 hours, too.
Oh, it's the worst. Only Monopoly should ever last 4 hours.
I lost, too. She's so much better at it. Maybe this is what we need to do in politics, Matt, is instead of having elections, we need to have poker tournaments.
I love it. 100%.
And you elect your champion, and they go in, and whoever wins the pot gets to make the rules.
The only problem I have with that is it seems like a lot of poker players are real douchebags with those sunglasses and everything like that. But I do think there should be more about games of chance or, you know, you got to or Scrabble or things like that or have the politicians go on Jeopardy. Let Aaron Rodgers host it. I think we need to have some feats of mental strength if you want to become a leader.
Okay, so goodbye elections. It's time for contest of champions.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
I love this idea, Matt. So let's create like a pentathlon of events. I think there should be a joust on full horseback. I think there should be caber tossing. What else could there be?
I use this one all the time. Yeah, the person running for office can pick four of their closest advisors. We do a little tug of war.
Ooh, tug of war is great. I love that one with the ribbon tied in the middle and it's going back and
Mud
forth.
Pit.
Oh. I got a suggestion. Mm. I think arm wrestle, but you have to do the Stallone and over the top where you have to twist your hat around backwards. So look, I'm turning on a switch.
And on top of that, as you're in the middle of arm wrestling, you have to explain what your specific policies are to help the middle class.
Oh my God, I got such a good idea, Matt. Why did I not think of this? You've had the answer all along, buddy.
I always did.
Yeah, true. We do like you guys do on Super Bowls where you weigh in at the beginning of the day and the person who gained the most weight in one day wins.
There you go. Love it. I feel Kathleen Wynne would have been at a disadvantage.
I don't think Doug Ford was going to lose.
Doug Ford is like, oh, okay, hold my beer. Actually, no. What are you doing? Give me my beer back.
A buck a beer. Hold my buck a beer. It's 1 o'clock and I know you've got to go and do the show. So shall we wrap it up? I don't really have any other sports to get to. The Raptors were confusing. The Leafs were hilariously fun. I don't know anything about politics. You had a really smart thing. Oh, we didn't do the Quiet Place trailer. Let's do this real quick.
All right. Before we do that, real quick, our sponsor is Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. If you need legal help, contact him at jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The phone number, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Quiet Place Part 2. Oh, it looks great.
Okay, so the trailer came out, and it's not a traditional trailer in the sense that there's some scenes, but it's mostly Emily Blunt and John Krasinski talking about the film.
Yeah.
What do you like about it? Describe it, and what do you like about it?
I think what I love about it just in general is this is a movie that absolutely screams a sequel because there's just so much more of that world that we can learn about. You know, where they are, where those aliens came from, where are other human beings? You know, you got a little taste of it in the first one. So I was just such a big fan of the first one. Also, I'm just a fan of just a big, smart movie that the first one was that I'm jonesing for this one.
Emily Blunt's fantastic. If she's in a film, it already has a good chance to be good. Mm-hmm. The first one it's funny because it's both overrated and underrated. It's really quite good. And so for snobs, they tend to underrate it because it's made by the guy from The Office, so they don't take it seriously. And you should. It's actually a really well-made movie. It's a bit overrated in the sense that, how do I put this? No, it's not so much that it's overrated. It's just it's not really a horror. Like, it's sold as a horror, but it's a horror the way Get Out is a horror. It's kind of a more of a thriller with spookiness in it.
Yeah, that's fine. Know?
And so for the horror fan, it's a bit overrated because there aren't really too many scares, but... it's good. But here's my take on this, Matt. You start the first movie with an extremely claustrophobic world. They have to be so quiet. They're stuck in their house and on their property. It's very claustrophobic. And then the second movie looks like you say, like you expand the world. There's other people. There's battles with the aliens. So here's the thing. It reminds me a bit of Aliens. The best case scenario for this movie is the movie Aliens. The first movie, the Ridley Scott one, small, claustrophobic, intense, long stretches of quiet. And the second one by James Cameron is a big, brawling adventure action movie, you know, hilarious Bill Paxton, like one of the great shoot 'em up adventure movies of all time. I don't think that's what they're going for with this, but if it works, they'll go from small, claustrophobic art style film to giant blockbuster, oh my God, I ate all my popcorn and that was so much fun film.
Oh God, I hope you're right. And that is a perfect analogy. And I hope they pull it off. It's the incredible thing about those two Alien movies is that they're in the same world, yet they were so different.
I don't know if there's ever been another franchise that had such a jump from movie one to movie two stylistically.
What about, I guess it was a trilogy, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back.
I feel like the story evolved, but the tone remained the same. I mean, they really do feel like different movies. Alien is a good old-fashioned scary movie.
Yeah.
And Aliens is basically just a funny, broad shoot 'em up.
Maybe, the different Friday the 13th. Eventually, he took Manhattan. That was a very different version.
You know, Matt, I knew you were going to say that, not because it was a good answer, but because of your obsession with Friday the 13th. It was like your brain just reset there.
It did. I'm up at the cottage. What do you expect?
Are you alone?
No. What do you think? I'm nuts.
I love when you still to this day, when you go up and you're alone, you have to point it out. It's like, I'm at the cottage alone.
Yep. Then every morning when I wake up, I'm like, why were you nervous last night? You dummy.
Are you nervous every night?
No, it's usually just the first night. Then after that, I get over it. Like my last time up here, I wandered around the island at night by myself. I went to the boathouse because there was a basketball game that we didn't get on our cable package, but my cousins had it at the other end. So I did that.
Once again, Matt, you've managed to redefine hero. time and time again. You know, Matt, the good thing, and we can leave on this note, is if you do feel a little nervous because you're up there and it's kind of spooky, from what I understand, you can have a sip or two of wine to take the edge off. You should try it.
That's just crazy enough to work. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.